the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science.
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to journey number 130 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring The Cask of Amontillado and The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe. I'm your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Burns, Oregon. And welcome back to the Edgar Allan Poe celebration. We are in the second month of the celebration. I do plan on trying to make these Edgar Allan Poe months only a single month in the year, but lots been going on this spring and summer, which has prevented me from doing that. It's interesting because I remember now why I avoided this time of year for the Edgar Allan Poe month, and I focused on January when Edgar Allan Poe's birthday is, because I wanted to avoid running Edgar Allan Poe month at the same time that Norm Sherman over on the Drabblecast is running his H.P. Lovecraft month, which is kind of the inspiration for what I'm doing here with Edgar Allan Poe. I don't get quite as many authors contributing, and I did have to fundraise to get Ken Scholz's story this year, which I'm glad I did, and I'm grateful again for your donations. But I just don't have the same cash flow there that Norm does to be able to run several original stories based upon the works of Edgar Allan Poe. But again, I'm grateful for what I've been able to do. All that aside, I do recommend you to also, if you don't already, go over to the Drabblecast and listen to H.P. Lovecraft Month over there. Norm always does a really good job. But anyway, let's get back to Edgar here. The last podcast, I played two of Edgar Allan Poe's classic tales, The Telltale Heart and The Black Cat. And both of those stories had something similar where the narrator was the murderer. And I promised you that I would run the third leg of that triangle of terror from Edgar Allan Poe and play you The Cask of Amontillado here today in this episode. And so we're definitely going to lead off with that. Both of the tales that you're going to hear today are from a radio show called The Weird Circle. And I just discovered this podcast recently, within the last several months, and have really kind of enjoyed listening to the stories. Again, this is another, a lot of these radio programs during this time frame all kind of run around this theme of, you know, these strange stories, these offbeat stories. And The Weird Circle is definitely has a good selection of strange, weird tales to tell. And it has a lot of adaptations of Edgar Allan Poe stories. And again, I was tempted to feature some of the stories that you're probably not familiar with. But as I established last week, I guess this year's theme is classic Poe, giving you what Edgar Allan Poe is known best for, and trying to I guess, highlight the best that Poe has to offer. I will warn you that these radio adaptations do take some liberties with the material. Not that they change the events, but they do seem to add a little bit to them. I guess without spoiling it for you, I'll let you listen to the episode. So let's get into it. Come with me, and let's journey into Italy during Carnival.
Knocking at the door.
Please.
And at you, Sam.
Please, sir, couldn't you walk just a bit more up?
A little upright. A little bit more upright. Who that? And at you, Sam.
By the last breath of the four winds that blow, I'll have revenge upon Fortunato. Smile in his face, I'll say, come, let us go. I've a cask of Amontillado. Sheltered inside from the cold of the snow, follow me now to the vault down below, drinking the wine as we laugh at the time which is passing incredibly slow.
Seven tiers of amateur masonry, holding steadfast against time's weathering tides. Except, yes, there, toward the center, a missing stone has left the blackened gap in the edifice. He stands, staring at it for an indeterminate period. Then, belatedly sees his own hand reaching toward the breach. Panicked, he tries to will stasis to the mutinous appendage, which is arrested only by the sudden concussion. As if shelled from its far side, the wall explodes toward him, enveloping him in churning shadow. He thrashes like a drunken seaman in a maelstrom as the darkness floods his mouth, his nostrils, even the corners of his clenched eyes. All the while, the engulfing torrent sounds a single word inside his head, filling it with the same five siren syllables. Amontillado.
Restless sea, we are met to call from out of the past stories, strange and weird. Bellkeeper, toll the bell, so that all may know we are gathered again in the Weird Circle.
Phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, the cask of Amontillado.
Bells, jester's bells. For 40 years I've lived with the sound of those bells. Fool's bells, jester's bells. They call me rich old Angelo Montresor. Envy me my palazzo and my well-stocked wine cellars, my vast estates and honored reputation. Little do they know that all I possess is dust and ashes, for I am a man who longs for death. But years ago, in this same lovely Italian town, I was the young Angelo, filled with dreams of the future, happy in the company of my good friend Fortunato. We were walking together one spring evening in the Piazza Santa Anna.
Come, Angelo. Here's the cafe. They say Beppo keeps rare old wines. I should like to sample some.
I know you fancy yourself a great connoisseur of vintages, Fortunato mio, but I shall not join you now, for I am meeting Lucia.
You and your Lucia. Let's have a glass or two. Keep her waiting. That's good for any girl.
Lucia isn't any girl. She's the bright star of my life. I love her very dearly.
Love? You may love her, but what makes you think you can win her? What have you to offer as a son-in-law? A likely face and figure, granted. But wealth?
I'm my uncle's heir.
All you Montresors are long-lived. Have you business sense, brains, ambition?
My ambition is to have Lucia for my wife, a small casa,
and... Yes, and many sniveling bambinos.
Yes.
Now, my dear simpleton, you haven't a chance with her father. Now, suppose it were me. Lucia is beautiful, yes. I might even wish to marry her myself. And I could, yes. Merely by telling her father that I wish to. That would be a good business alliance. But love? Ah, nonsense.
How can you say such things, Fortunato? Why do you brag so?
I'm not bragging. I shall always get what I want. I am a leader of men, whilst you are a lovelorn loon. Born to be a sheep and a follower.
Well, I'm not following you now. Go, sample your fine wine and talk of the great things you will do. I have something much more important to do.
Angelo! Angelo!
It's Lucia. Isn't she lovely?
Very lovely.
Caro mio.
Lucia, darling. It's wonderful to see you.
Greetings, my little pigeon.
Good evening, Fortunato. But I am not your little pigeon.
Good night, Angelo.
Arrivederci, Fortunato. Lucia. Lucia, dear, you were almost rude to Fortunato. Why?
I do not like him. I know he is your friend, but...
He is. He's a great fellow and very fond of me.
Is he?
Of course. Man's man, perhaps. Not a woman's ideal.
He's cruel and hard. A girl can tell. But let's not talk of Fortunato. Are you going to speak to Father tonight?
Yes. But I'm afraid he won't allow you to marry me.
Why not, Angelo?
I have no wealth, no business sense.
Darling, do not belittle yourself so. You are all the world to me.
Lucia, is this miracle true? You do really love me?
With all my heart. Now and forever. Be brave, Angelo. Speak to my father. He will not deny me happiness.
To my great joy, her father gave us his blessing. Lucia was to be my own dear wife. I was walking on air, humbly, deeply grateful. Just before our wedding was to take place, all our friends were invited to Lucia's home to celebrate. It was a happy evening of song, wine, and congratulations. Fortunato, most of all, seemed elated at my good fortune, and he and I were the last to take our leave. We walked along through the dark, empty streets, talking of the party and plans for my coming wedding. We reached his door.
See here, boy, I do not like your going home alone.
Huh?
It's the blackest kind of night. I think I should go along with you.
You mean you walk me to my door and then I escort you to yours and so back and forth till dawn?
But these streets are not safe so late at night.
Oh, nonsense. I have my lantern.
Well, don't say I didn't warn you.
No, I'm not afraid. Buonanotte, my friend.
Till tomorrow, Angelo.
That's funny. Fortunato's worrying over me. It is pretty dark.
What's that?
I keep imagining I hear things. Someone is following me.
Who's there?
That's him. Grab him.
What do you want?
Oh, you fool, Rufio. Don't let this lantern shine in your face like that. Smash it.
Help! Help! I've got his hands. Get that sack over his head.
Keep him quiet, Rufio. But don't kill him. They don't pay for corpses.
Just a gentle tap. As limp as a rag in my arms. Now, take his feet and hurry.
I regained my senses and awoke to a misery of mental and physical anguish. I had no way of knowing where I was. The hot sun was beating down as I lay with other human wretches in the scuppers of a filthy ship. Running through my aching head was the name Rufio, and the picture of that scarred, cruel face glaring in the last glow of my lantern. I had been sold into slavery. I, Angelo Montresor, lashed and beaten on endless marches over burning sands, and on into the barren mountains, where in our misery and pain, we were put to hard labor in the stone quarries. I'll not forget those endless years. The ache in my heart for my beloved Lucia, my longing for my native land, and above all, the haunting hate I bore for the man Rufio. I swore I'd find him. If not on this earth, then in an even worse hell than the one to which he had condemned me. And then one day, a miracle happened. I escaped. Starving and nearly dead from exhaustion, I reached the small seacoast village. There I begged crusts. Yes, begged in the streets for soldi to buy my passage on some vessel bound for Italy.
See here, my son. Look up here.
Allah, Allah! Arms! Arms for the love of...
Let me look at you.
Benedetto Cielo. My language. My native tongue.
As I thought, your skin is dark enough and you're filthy as any beggar. But those eyes of yours tell me that once you had another god than Allah. Come, man, speak. Are you not a countryman of mine?
Si, signore. And I hope to return to my homeland as I hope for heaven.
You are not fleeing justice.
I'm seeking justice for the foulest treachery.
I'll let that wait. You can tell me your story later. My ship is about to weigh anchor. And if you'd like to come along...
Like to? May the saints bless you. But I have no money to pay you with.
Well, don't let that worry you. After a bit of food and rest, I'll let you work your passage home.
As a free man, I sailed for home, stepped ashore on the soil of my beloved country, and walked eagerly into the town where I was born. I longed to seek out Lucia, but I was ashamed of the sailor's clothes I wore, so I hurried to my old friend Fortunato's to borrow something suitable. Is Signor Fortunato at home?
No, sir. Only the Signora is in.
His wife?
Si, Signor.
Good old Fortunato married? Why, this is wonderful news. My compliments to your mistress, and say that a very old friend of her husband begs an interview.
Madonna is not well. Oh. But I shall ask if she will see you. Come in, Signora.
Thank you. I shall wait here.
Signora!
I heard every word, Anna. Leave us. Quickly. Angelo. Angelo.
Lucia.
Angelo, my love. Oh, is it really you? Let me touch you. Let me look at your dear face.
Oh, my Lucia. How I've longed to hold you close in my arms. But now... Now, you and Fortunato...
Yes, Angelo. It was my father's wish that I marry Fortunato. Oh. When they told me that you were dead, I died too. I became a thing with no heart, without any will.
Oh, Lucia.
Fortunato was your friend. I thought it would bring you nearer because we could talk of you. But he's never allowed me to mention your name. Oh, Angelo, he is so cruel.
Fortunato... Cruel to you? Oh, my darling. What shall we do? I love you so.
And I have loved only you. And always shall. But, Angelo, there's something I must beg of you. Implore you to do.
Lucia, beloved, what is it?
When Fortunato comes, if he seems rude to me, say nothing. Do nothing. It would only make him more cruel. Oh, there he is. He must not know that I have told you. Act, Angelo. Act for my sake. We must seem carefree and gay.
Carefree and gay.
Fortunato, come in here. A miracle has happened. Why, hurry, see. Here is a long-lost friend.
What are you babbling about? Who is this? Dio possente, Angelo. But you were killed.
No, old friend, not killed.
Well, heaven be praised. We mourned you all these years. What happened? Where have you been?
Well, that night I left you at your house, I was followed and set upon by two ruffians.
Santa Maria.
And to think I let you go home alone. Oh, I blame myself. Have you any suspicion?
Suspicion?
Yes.
Absolutely none. Through all the years of torture, I try to think, who did this to me? What hidden enemy?
Or perhaps, Angelo, a false friend.
Be still, Lucia. This is man's talk. You will serve us best by getting a bottle of my favorite Lacrima Christi from the cellars. This should be a celebration.
Si, Fortunato. Though I do not know one bottle from another.
She has a fear of my wine cellars, hates to go down there. Ah, what an escape you had, Angelo. From matrimony, I mean. Were you surprised to learn I had wed your Lucia?
Why, I thought you scoffed at love.
So I do. Marriage of convenience, uniting of two fortunes. Lucia's a very lucky woman. I'm a rich man.
Yes. Lucia is very lucky.
Here she comes. We'll see if we're lucky. Well, sweet pigeon, what have you brought us to drink? Ah, sapristi, I thought so. You've as much knowledge of wine as a donkey. Vino Rosso.
Fortunato. Why, there's wine all over Lucia's dress.
And it may make her more cheerful, even if it is only on the outside.
Lucia, are you all right?
Pay no attention to her clutching at her heart, Angelo. That's a gesture she's fond of.
But she's not well.
Lucia's always ailing, aren't you, my sweet?
Shall I get another bottle?
No, I'll fetch the wine myself. But wait. Perhaps I shouldn't leave you two childhood sweethearts alone together. In those rags, Angelo, you are no romantic hero. And as for Lucia...
Lucia. What is he doing to you? Oh, my darling, I can't believe it. Fortunato, one so good a companion, a gentle friend.
My dearest, in those lost happy hours so long ago, I warned you that Fortunato was cruel and hard, not to be trusted.
And I believed you wrong. Oh, my Lucia, come away with me. We'll seek a new life together.
Oh, no, Angelo. I am Fortunato's wife.
What of our love? Our love that has sustained us during all these years.
That love will never die, my darling. But there can be no happiness for us on this earth. Our love can be a love fulfilled only after death. Oh, Angelo. Angelo.
Lucia.
I hardly know how I left Fortunato's house that day, nor remember how I took up my lonely life. My uncle had died, and I was now the owner of the Montresor fortunes. Months passed. Fortunato and I met, of course. I was unable to understand his treatment of Lucia, but I didn't blame him for my tragedy. He had thought me dead. Seeking forgetfulness, I often wandered to the waterfront. The wretched hovels were usually silent and dark. But one night I saw a glimmer of light and heard angry voices. I was about to pass by when I heard a familiar voice.
I paid you to kill him, Rufio, you dog, and in order to gain more money, you sold him into slavery. How dare you?
Signor Fortunato, that meant death, a slow death.
Well, he didn't die. Angelo Montresor is home and alive, and you must do your work again.
Oh? Oh, so you have come to pay me more gold for a second killing?
Yes.
Signor Fortunato, I hate shedding blood, but I do love money. You are a rich man. Surely you don't wish Montresor to learn of your friendly efforts?
Blackmail, eh?
Persuasion. For my silence, 1,000 lire.
1,000...
Death! Take that!
For your silence.
I couldn't move or cry out. I hardly breathed. I saw my old friend Fortunato sling from that wretched hovel, a liar, a murderer, a Judas. I had to think. I would have vengeance, that was certain. But I must run no risk of being found out. Above all, Lucia must not be involved. She must not learn of her husband's treachery. I began to lay my plans, but vowed that neither by word or deed would I cause Fortunato to doubt my goodwill. This resolve was soon put to the test. It was carnival time. I came to face with Fortunato. The man wore motley, and on his head, a pointed jester's cap with bells. Gaily costumed girls followed him.
La saluto, Angelo. Well met.
My dear Fortunato, how remarkably well you look.
Don't I? A connoisseur of beauty as well as of wine. But come along, let's have a bottle right now.
I'd love to, but I'm not in costume.
Well, get yourself one. This is carnival. Meet me at the cafe. We'll make a night of it.
Perhaps I will.
All right, see you later. Then I'll wait for you. Don't fail me.
Signor. Signor Angelo. I thought I'd never find you in this crowd.
Anna, what brings you?
Madonna Lucia is dying.
No. Oh, no.
Father Luigi is with her. Hurry, Signor. She is calling for you.
You have come in time, my son. She has not long to live.
Where is she, Father?
In here, my son. She awaits you. Dear Ciro, dear Ciro.
Angelo, beloved. You have come.
My own dearest love.
Yes. Your own. Forever. I've always belonged to you. Never to Fortunato. Oh, beware of him, Angelo mio. He taunted me cruelly today. Boasted that it was he who had paid to have you murdered.
I know, Lucia mia. Don't try to talk. I know it all. Just lie here in my arms and remember our great love there.
But Angelo, I beg you, do nothing against Fortunato. It would only bring harm to you.
Beloved, nothing matters but you.
Angelo, kiss me. Our last... Addio, my love.
Lucia. Lucia. Addio. Lucia died in my arms, and my heart died with her. But my mind was keen. At last, I was determined that the plan I had made would be carried out. Now, tonight, the carnival was at the height of its madness, and I knew where to find Fortunato. Providing myself with a mask and domino to avoid recognition, I pushed my way through the revelers. Fortunato! Fortunato!
Who called?
It is I, Angelo.
I didn't know you in that gay disguise. What's the secret?
Where can I find Lucchese?
Lucchese, why?
Well, some time ago, I ordered a cask of Amontillado.
Ah, that nectar of the gods.
And when I got home just now, I found that it had been delivered.
You jest. In the middle of the carnival?
Yes. And I was silly enough to pay the full Amontillado price. I was afraid of losing a bargain.
Lucchese cannot tell Amontillado from Chianti. I am the man to tell you whether you've a bargain or not. Where is this precious cask?
In the dungeons of my house, my secret cellar.
To the secret cellars, then. Lead on. You're making me thirsty.
Oh, no, my friend, no. I can't impose on you. Now, Lucchese...
Nonsense! Come!
No, Fortunato, be sensible. You have a severe cold, and remember, my vaults are damp.
My cold? A Amontillado. That will cure my cough. Let me judge it for you. Come!
Taking two torches from the wall, I gave one to Fortunato and bowed him through suites of rooms to the archway leading to the vaults. Down long, winding stairs, we stood at length on the wet earth of the Montresor catacombs. Fortunato's step was a bit unsteady, for he had tasted much wine, and his bells jingled as he walked.
The cast.
Oh, much further on, beyond these newer coffins. Oh, it's cold here. We'd best go back. Your health is precious, and you are a man of importance. I cannot be responsible for your illness.
Enough. I shall not die of a cough.
True, true. I do not mean that you should. But stop a moment. Here in these bins is wine. A drink of this Chateau Lafitte will drive out the damp. Here you are. Break off the neck and warm yourself.
Fair Bacco, a cheerful spot for a drink with all these coffins and bones, eh? I drink to the buried that repose around us.
And I drink with you to your long life.
These vaults of yours are enormous.
Yes. We're below the riverbed now. Beyond these casks and coffins are the inmost recesses of the catacombs.
I can wait no longer. Where is this Amontillado?
In there.
Through that grill door, an iron door.
Looks like a dungeon.
So it is. It's the dungeon where the old Montresors kept their precious captives and where now I keep my most precious vintages.
I can hardly see my torch burn so dimly.
Oh, that's just because the air is foul in here. But look, there's the great cask. I'll hold your torch. There. Here's a flagon. Go in and sample it to your heart's content.
At last, the Amontillado. I have not tasted it in years. Ah, Angelo, this is superb. It is priceless. Ah, but bring the torches. Where are you?
Here. Outside the door.
Angelo, what are you doing? A very good joke indeed. An excellent joke. We'll have a good laugh about it back at the cafe. Yeah. Now let me out. It's damp in here.
It's very damp. Feel the nitre on the walls.
Open that door. I wish to return to the carnival.
The carnival is ended for you. Besides, you promised to give me your opinion of Maya Montegado.
Just the one. Let me out of here.
The door is solid iron. You'll only hurt your hand.
Angelo, open this door. I say open it this moment.
And I say no. This is my moment. My time of revenge.
Revenge? For the love of heaven, Montresor, don't leave me here. Mercy.
Had you mercy when you stabbed Rufio?
Montresor, the damp, the dark, have pity.
Had you pity when you paid to have me murdered?
Angelo, save me. Don't leave me here. Pity for Lucia's sake.
Silence. Don't mention her sainted name.
But I'll die like
that. Yes, Fortunato, you'll die. And none but the rats will ever find you here. I leave you with the bones of my ancestors.
Angelo, come back. Don't leave me. Angelo.
The hideous tinkle of those jester bells. 40 years I've lived with the sound of those bells. Fool's bells. Jester's bells.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have heard another immortal tale in The Weird Circle. Bellkeeper, toll the bell. Be here in this lonely cave by the restless sea once again next time for another immortal tale in The Weird Circle.
So there you have it. There is the Cask of Amontillado. One more classic Edgar Allan Poe story with a first-person unreliable narrator. Did you notice something different about this story than the other two? We could play the old Sesame Street song.
One of these things is not like the others.
One of these things doesn't belong.
Can you tell which thing is not like the others by the time we finish our song?
Anyway, they're very similar. All three narrators end up killing somebody in the story. But the difference in this story is that our narrator never gets caught. He gets away with it. It says at the end of the story there that for half a century, nobody has ever discovered the rotting corpse of Fortunato down in the catacombs. He got away with this. Nobody knew about it. Where in the other two stories, Telltale Heart and the Black Cat, there's that ironic twist at the end where either by their inward guilt, in the case of the Telltale Heart, where he hears the beating heart and he can't take it anymore, and he tells the police where to find the body, or an outside influence with the cat calling from behind the wall where the narrator had deposited the dead body of his wife right when the cops were there. And both of them in those stories also were kind of overconfident in their ability to fool the police. Here in this story, Cask of Amontillado, there are no police. Nobody ever knows. And I think that's kind of an interesting difference in this story. Several years ago, Pseudopod ran an original story. It was titled Something There Is. And it was read by Classic Tales narrator BJ Harrison. And that was written by Joe Nazaire. And it's kind of a sequel to The Cask of Amontillado, where we do start to see a weakening of the psychic armor of Montressor, where this guilt begins to overcome him. And it's a very interesting read. If you like this story, I do recommend you going over to Pseudopod, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, and listening to Something There Is. It is a really good homage to Edgar Allan Poe, not only to this story, but it does reference things just subtly from other stories of Edgar Allan Poe. It's a really good story, and so I direct you over there. And as far as any of these stories go, I do recommend that you go read the source material. Go listen to, or go read The Cask of Amontillado in Edgar's own words. Like I say, these radio adaptations, they take a little bit of liberties. I alluded to that at the beginning of this. But in the original tale, Poe never talks about exactly what Fortunato did that was so grievous to Montressor, to make him want to get revenge against him by walling him up in the catacombs. In the radio adaptation, it pretty much says that he stole the woman that he loved and married her and treated her poorly. This is the trespass that is unforgivable that causes Montressor to kill Fortunato. It just starts off talking about the thousand injuries of Fortunato I had borne. And he talks about how he must punish Fortunato. Not only punish, but punish with impunity. And so it wasn't just this one single act. It was a thousand things that he had done wrong. And it says when he ventured upon insult, he vowed that Montressor avowed revenge. And so we don't know exactly what Fortunato has done to earn this terrible end. but we know that revenge is the motive here. And so I guess the person who was doing the radio adaptation felt that Montressor needed some solid, concrete reason to be killing Montressor rather than to leave it vague. They defined what it was. And, you know, I can see that as well, but I kind of like the elusiveness of the mystery of not knowing why he's doing this thing and that he's probably a little bit crazy. You know, and a lot of people ask me, I guess only not a lot of people, but some people have asked me, you know, you're a good guy, you're a religious guy, you know, you don't believe in murder, you don't joy in these things. Why do you like Edgar Allan Poe so much when he's talking about killing and plotting a murder and, you know, killing in these terrible ways, you know, walling somebody up or killing them because of their eye, their evil eye? You know, why do you find so much joy in these things? And I guess, I don't know. I guess it's just, there's just something about it that fascinates me, you know, the human mind. And I just like a well-told tale. And Edgar Allan Poe can really spin a good tale. When he does it well, he's a master. And, you know, I don't love every story that Edgar Allan Poe has written. Some of them are pretty dense. With some of them, it isn't as masterfully written as these stories that I've been sharing. But they're all fascinating, and I love this kind of fiction. I don't necessarily always follow horror, you know, contemporary horror stories. But there's something about these Edgar Allan Poe tales, and to some extent, other literature type of horror writing. And so that's all. It's not that I'm secretly wishing I could murder somebody or I'm, you know, wanting to do these things. It's just that I love his writing. There's just something I love about that irony, or that, you know, the getting into somebody's mind. You know, it's like the difference between watching a Friday the 13th movie or, say, you know, any of those, Halloween or Nightmare on Elm Street. Some of those movies I enjoyed watching when I was a kid, you know, just for the sake of it was kind of a symbol of being an adult or whatever, trying to watch those kind of movies. And, you know, Freddy Krueger did kind of have a sadistic side that was kind of fun in a morbid kind of way. But it's the difference of like a Jason, a Friday the 13th movie, and something like Silence of the Lambs or something like Psycho, where you really get into the mind of these killers. And, you know, it's another reason why I like Alfred Hitchcock. You know, so we have Edgar Allan Poe, we had Alfred Hitchcock, we have, you know, these types of Twilight Zone type of things, where it's just, it's something that triggered a love that I had for it when I was young, and that continues to today. And it's not really a statement of my personality or my desires or anything like that. It's just something that I enjoy. And it's not something that's not the only types of things that I like to listen to or to read. There's lots of other things that I like, as hopefully you've been able to tell, you know, science fiction, superheroes, adventure, things of religious significance, history. You know, all these types of things intrigue me. It's not just horror and Edgar Allan Poe. But anyway, that was a far departure from where I was headed there. But let's get to the second installment of this double feature of Poe. Here we have another episode of The Weird Circle. And we're kind of switching gears here. We're getting away from first-person narrator, from the point of view of the murderer type of stories. And we're moving into another genre that Edgar Allan Poe pretty much started. This is really the first modern detective story. Murders in the Rue Morgue. Before there was a Sherlock Holmes or a Hercule Poirot. How do you say his name? Before there was a Perry Mason, before there was a Rick Castle or a Grissom from CSI, there was C. Auguste Dupin. Again, I'm not very good at French. I don't know if it's Dupin or Dupuy or whatever it could be. But anyway, this is the first of three stories that feature Dupin. And you can definitely see the seeds of Sherlock Holmes here. You can definitely see the seeds of what the detectives that we have known throughout the ages. Going so far as to say that, you know, Edgar Allan Poe could be considered the great-great-granddaddy of Batman, for that matter. You know, this is the heritage that, you know, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Agatha Christie and even Alfred Hitchcock or any detective writer. This is the beginning. And so, anyway, this is the first of the detective stories, The Murders in the Rue Morgue. It's probably the most famous. I guess Purloined Letter is pretty famous as well. People typically hear a reference to the Purloined Letter. I have a particular like for the second and longest Dupin story, which is called The Mystery of Marie Roget, which I hope to feature on the podcast here in the next few years or so. But this is the one that started it all for Edgar Allan Poe's detective stories. And we have another murder, but now we're on the trail and trying to find out who did the murder, who did this. This is one of the first whodunits. So come with me, and let's go to the land of Paris, where there has been a murder. Can you guess where? That's right, on the Rue Morgue.
Disprove the impossible.
A classic tale of mystery and murder.
The Rue Morgue, of course.
This is really the most astonishing crime.
George C. Scott.
Most puzzling problem.
Rebecca De Mornay.
That's just what I need right now. A little danger. Something to scare me out of my wits.
There's work to be done.
The murders in the Rue Morgue. Next.
They're an insoluble mystery.
This is not your common criminal.
See, we are met to call from out of the past stories, strange and weird. Bellkeeper, toll the bell, so that all may know we are gathered again in the Weird Circle.
Ask you to come to my humble apartment tonight to endeavor to stun you with my superior knowledge of crime and criminals. I've asked you here only to prove to you that the murders in the Rue Morgue present no great insoluble mystery.
Monsieur Dupin, if you think the case is so obvious, tell me, who is the murderer?
He will be here shortly, Monsieur le Prefect of Police.
Here?
Who is it? A murderer here?
Gentlemen, I give you my word as a man of honor. that he will be here in my apartment at precisely 10 o'clock this evening.
How can you be so sure?
I have asked him to come. It is exactly 9 o'clock now, gentlemen. And in the hour remaining to us before we meet the murderer, I shall explain to you as simply as I can how I managed to arrive at my conclusion.
Yes, do, Monsieur Dupin. I'm always interested in guesswork.
Guesswork, my dear fellow? This is not guesswork.
No?
Now, gentlemen, let us retrace the case. The story begins, if I'm not mistaken, with Madame L'Espanaye and her daughter Camille on the afternoon of December 16th, 1841.
Well, of course, you're correct so far anyway, Dupin.
I bow, Monsieur le Prefect. Madame L'Espanaye and her daughter Camille entered the Bank of France at precisely 2:45 in the afternoon to transact important business.
Ah, Madame L'Espanaye, I've been waiting for you.
So good of you, Monsieur Le Bon. Have you met my daughter, Camille?
I don't think I've had the pleasure. How do you do, mademoiselle?
How do you do, Monsieur Le Bon?
Are you quite sure, Madame L'Espanaye, that you wish to withdraw all this money at this time?
Quite positive.
But 4,000 francs is a great deal to keep about one's household, madame.
I'm quite aware of the danger involved, Monsieur Le Bon. But if the bank keeps this withdrawal quiet, nobody else need know that I have a sum of money in the house.
Well, things do get about, madame. There's no use inviting unnecessary danger.
The danger is my problem, Monsieur Le Bon. I think we'd better let the matter drop at that.
Have you, any protection against possible thievery at home, madame?
Ah, no, monsieur, but Mama and I have protection enough. We bolt and lock our doors. It's absolutely impossible for anybody to enter the house unless he should break the door down.
But does any male protector live in the house?
My husband died many years ago.
Madame misunderstands me. I'm only asking these questions for your own good. Two unprotected women living alone in a large house can invite trouble.
That is our problem.
If Madame insists.
And I do insist.
Very well, Madame. I have the money here. I myself will see you both home to ensure safe delivery. But let me warn you now. The minute you arrive in your home on the Rue Morgue, the Bank of France resigns all future responsibility.
We understand, Monsieur Le Bon. We understand perfectly.
Interesting that it's far.
So, gentlemen, the first step in this little tragedy was completed. Madame L'Espanaye and her daughter insisted on taking the money home from the bank. Monsieur Le Bon drove them in his carriage to their house, the large, bleak house, number 12, Rue Morgue. When they arrived there, Monsieur Le Bon looked about for the gendarme who was in charge of that particular block.
Whoa! Whoa!
May I help you out, Mademoiselle Camille?
Thank you, Monsieur Le Bon.
Madame?
Thank you. Thank you.
Is that the gendarme on the corner, the gendarme usually on this block?
Not having had any reason to talk to the gendarme, Monsieur Le Bon, I wouldn't know.
Yes, I think it is, Monsieur.
Gendarme! Gendarme!
All this fuss over a little money. Really, you'd think we were incapable of taking care of ourselves.
Well, I think Monsieur Le Bon is very thoughtful, Maman.
Gendarme!
Coming, Monsieur, coming.
Do you live on the first floor, Madame L'Espanaye?
On the fourth floor, in the back of the house. I own this house, and I've shut up all the other rooms.
You mean this entire house is unoccupied
you
except for...
You called me, monsieur.
Yes, I did. I want you to keep a special watch on this house for the next week or so. Madame L'Espanaye and her daughter will have a considerable amount of money in the house.
I will watch the house like a watchdog.
You would be better off if you did it like a man. Then you'd use your head instead of your feet.
Monsieur!
What is your name, gendarme?
Gendarme Isidore Musée.
Very well. Gendarme Isidore Musée. I leave these ladies in your care.
You needn't worry about a thing, mademoiselle. And madame.
I'm sure we won't. That is, as long as you don't spread the news around the neighborhood that we've got 4,000 francs hidden here in the house.
Who, me, madame? I am the law, and your secret is safe with me.
Come along, Maman. I'm getting hungry.
Yes, dear.
Thank you so much for all you've done, Monsieur Le Bon.
It is nothing, mademoiselle, nothing at all. Just a courtesy extended by the Bank of France.
I'll keep good watch, be assured of that. I'll keep very good watch.
Gentlemen, let us proceed to the next event. Gendarme Isidore Musée kept a very good watch on number 12 Rue Morgue. At 11 o'clock the evening of the tragedy, He strolled into the shop, two doors away from number 12, to buy a pouch of tobacco and to chat with his very good friend Pierre Moreau, a tiny man known as the neighborhood gossip.
Good evening, friend Isidore.
Evening.
I've been waiting for you. Yes, I've been waiting for you. You usually drop in at 9 o'clock. And I said to myself as I sat here waiting for you, I said, where's my good friend Isidore?
It's been a busy evening this evening.
That's what I said to myself. If Isidore doesn't drop in to buy his usual box of tobacco, he's busy. There must be big news abroad, but then how could there be big news abroad on this block? That's what I said.
You were wrong, Pierre. Very wrong.
Wrong, eh? There is big news. Thievery?
No.
Murder?
No.
Well, then, I give up.
It's a secret.
Secret? What could be a secret? Somebody got married. That's no secret. Somebody died. That's no secret either. A child is ill, a contagious disease, an epidemic, or Paris will be infected?
No.
Well, I can't guess.
If you promise not to tell a soul...
Oh, not a soul.
Well, Madame L'Espinier...
Yes?
...and her daughter Camille... ...have withdrawn 4,000 francs from the bank today... ...and have it hidden in the house somewhere.
No.
And I must stand on guard.
Naturally.
But don't tell a soul.
Oh, not a soul. On my honor, not a single soul, Isidore. My word of honor, I swear it now.
And so, by midnight, gentlemen, the entire neighborhood in the Rue Morgue was buzzing.
4,000 francs in the L'Espinay household.
I hear it was 10,000.
Two women all alone.
Imagine it. 20,000 francs.
I wonder where...
And all that jewelry must be a veritable fortune hidden away.
Do you know that they say she's got money hidden in every corner of the house?
Imagine almost 1,000,000 francs in that house. I always knew there was something strange about those two women living all alone in a house like that. And in the rear... Fourth floor.
Yes, sitting in the bedroom of the fourth floor rear. But while the neighborhood was busy gossiping and chattering, Mademoiselle Camille and her mother were completely unaware of the commotion they had caused. It was almost 3 a.m. Camille had just finished undressing, and her mother was sitting in front of the mirror, brushing her hair so that they didn't notice the window opening in back of them.
I'm so tired, Mama.
Poor Camille. It's been a very busy day.
You know, I thought that Monsieur Le Bon was very nice.
He seems fairly affable.
Oh, Mama, fairly affable. I thought he was perfectly charming. So concerned over us.
No man ever gets that concerned over me. Must have been you, darling. All men see...
Stay calm, Camille. Don't
move. Mama, he's got a razor in his hand.
Don't move, Camille.
Mama, quick. Let's hide. He's coming closer.
Where, Camille? Where shall we go?
Into the closet, Mama. Quickly, Mama, into the closet.
Close the door.
Mama, he'll break the door down. He'll break the door down, Mama.
Watch out, Camille. He's breaking it down.
Help me, Mama.
How awful.
Quite right, gentlemen. Simply ghastly. We fully realize that this is a horrible atrocity, but we must remain factual. While all this was going on the fourth floor of number 12 Rue Morgue, the gendarme Isidore Musée, the little tobacconist Pierre Moreau, Monsieur Le Bon, who, strangely enough, was in the neighborhood at that very moment, and a passerby, a sailor, all four were attracted by the screams of the two women, and immediately tried to break into number 12, Rue Morgue.
Now stand back, everybody, while I break the door down. Stand back. This is the gendarme's job.
Break it down, Isidore. Break it down.
Up. Follow me, everybody. Up these stairs to the fourth floor.
Stand right behind you, Isidore. Right behind you.
Now the next flight. Keep going.
Wait a minute. Wait. Listen to that. He's speaking Italian.
No, it's Russian, Isidore.
No, Italian, Pierre.
I think it's Polish.
How would you know Polish, Monsieur Lebon? Have you ever heard Polish spoken?
No, but... Listen again. I think it's Dutch he's speaking.
Dutch, Polish, Italian, Russian. None of you know what you're talking about.
He stopped speaking, hasn't he?
Yes. Probably escaped.
Yes, probably. I wonder. Try the door.
Can you open it, Isidore?
No, it's locked.
I think we're too late.
I'm sure of it, sailor. I warned you about the gendarme.
Well, let's break the door down. One, two, three. Look.
What? Oh, the entire room is wrecked. Just exactly as if a maniac had torn up the place. The bed's torn apart.
Yes. I've sailed the seven seas, but I've never seen a place look like this in my entire life.
Monsieur Lebon, where are Mademoiselle Camille and her mother?
I don't know. They're not in here.
Look. Where?
There in the fireplace.
Oh.
It's Mademoiselle Camille.
Dead.
Yes. Dead. Poor girl. Here, help me, somebody.
Yes,
help me lift her up.
Look out this window.
Huh?
The old woman is lying in the courtyard below.
The sailor's right. Absolutely right. She's lying in the courtyard below, dead as a dead fish. Oh, probably twice as dead.
Somebody is guilty of this. Somebody. And as a member of the Paris police, I mean to find out who that guilty person is.
Yes, gentlemen. Isidore Musée, gendarme, swore up and down that he would find the murderer. Well, at 4 o'clock that morning, I was awakened from a sound sleep and called to number 12 Rue Morgue to examine the evidence. Monsieur le gendarme Musée was running around the room destroying the evidence, or at least what little evidence there was, as fast as he unearthed it. The three gentlemen who had been there with him were still waiting round out of a combined feeling of horror and curiosity. The sailor, whose name escaped me, was sitting on what was left of a bed, staring blankly around the room. Monsieur Pierre Moreau, the tobacconist, was watching Isidore Musée, the gendarme, play detective. He played it badly. And Monsieur Lebon was the picture of dejection. I entered the room and gazed about while Isidore supplied me with all the facts in the case, at least from his point of view.
And that is exactly what happened, Monsieur Dupin.
Very interesting, Monsieur Isidore Musée. And now, gentlemen, I wish to ask just a few questions.
Go ahead.
Now, all of you seem to think you heard the voice of the murderer.
Yes, indeed.
Well, we did, definitely.
No doubt about it.
And you, Monsieur Isidore Musée, you are positive that the murderer is an Italian?
Positive, Monsieur Dupin. Absolutely positive. I could tell by his intonation.
Mm-hmm. Do you speak Italian?
Oh, no. Definitely not.
Have you ever heard Italian spoken?
No, Monsieur, never. But I imagine...
Yes? You imagine what?
Oh, I imagine it would sound like that.
I see. And you, Monsieur Lebon... You said it was Polish.
Definitely Polish, without a doubt.
I judge you have lived in Poland a long time yet?
No, but I heard Polish spoken once.
Once? Yes. That makes you an excellent judge of the Polish language. How about you, Monsieur Pierre Moreau? What language did you say it was?
Russian, I thought, but that's only a guess, since I admit, and I admit it very freely, I'm not a man to hedge. I've never heard a word of Russian in my life.
Mm-hmm. I thought so. And how about you, Sarah?
I thought it was Dutch. I don't speak the Dutch language, but I've heard a considerable amount of Dutch spoken when I was in Holland 8 years ago.
8 years ago? Hmm?
I don't mean to make a suggestion, Monsieur Dupin, but Monsieur Lebon was the only man beside myself who knew about the money being kept in this house.
What are you insinuating, Monsieur Musée?
Insinuating? I'm an officer of the law, and I think it was very peculiar that you should just happen to be in this neighborhood at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Don't you live in this neighborhood, Monsieur Lebon?
No, but I've good reason to be here.
Oh, so? Suppose you tell us.
Well, I was worried about Mademoiselle Camille. I was rather attracted to the young lady. And, well, I had a feeling that there would be trouble over the money. Well, I was in the corner cafe having some tea until about 10 minutes before the murder occurred.
And then you strolled by the house on your way home, correct?
Quite correct.
My tobacco store is open all night.
All tobacco stores are open all night, Monsieur Pierre Moreau.
I was just walking by. I didn't steal the money.
But naturally. Nobody stole the money. It's in the safe behind this wall.
Huh? Are you positive, Monsieur Dupin?
Perfectly obvious that the money hasn't been touched. These murders were far too cruel to be instigated by man's greedy desire for financial reward. Here, let me open the safe and show you. I happen to know an interesting combination that will open any safe. I should have been a thief. So, there. That ought to open it.
Oh, it did.
Naturally. Now look. There's the 4,000 francs, safe and snug as a 4,000 franc group of notes should be.
Well, perhaps Monsieur Lebon was interrupted in the midst of his thievery. Perhaps he didn't have time to finish.
Well, nonsense. Monsieur Lebon was with you when you walked up the stairs.
Well, an accomplice, perhaps.
No, 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 Monsieur Isidore Musée. Let me show you something. Look at the fingerprints on this girl's neck. Very strong, heavy prints. And very large, too.
Why, yes. The murderer must have been a giant. His hand must have been twice as large as mine, and I have a large hand as hands go.
Yes, yes. The murderer was a giant. A giant with extraordinary strength. Gentlemen, I think now I have sufficient clues. Look at this window.
It's just a window.
Yes, just a window with a cord on it. A broken piece of cord. Clue number one. Clue number two. Look. Look at the dead girl's hand.
Huh? Why? She has some hair clutched in her hand.
Quite correct. And with this cord and this hair, I can find the murderer. Gentlemen, go home. Go home, get a good night's sleep, and I'll hand the murderer over to the prefect of police very soon.
Monsieur Dupin, don't forget to mention that I helped you. I'm due for promotion soon.
Well, that's very extraordinary. Well, I don't care, man.
And so, messieurs, that is the story. And you have the fact. A piece of cord and some hair. The condition of the room, the strength of the murderer, the passion of the deed, the lack of motivation should all suggest to you the very same thing it suggested to me.
Monsieur Dupin, you are talking in circles.
Circles? So? You mean to say you still don't know who the murderer is?
No, of course I don't know. And frankly, Monsieur Dupin, I don't think you know either.
Really, gentlemen. Really, gentlemen, you amaze me. Here, Monsieur le Prefect. Examine this piece of cord, if you will. What do you make out of it?
A piece of cord, yes. Well, let me see. Well, it's a piece of... Well, nothing except that, it's been torn.
Yes, it's been torn. Now,
yes.
Try to tear it yourself.
Well, try to tear... Well, I couldn't. It's a very, very strong cord.
Ah. Notice anything else?
Yes, now that I look at it, it's got a very unusual knot in it. But what does an unusual knot prove?
You will see what I mean presently. It's the first stroke of 10 o'clock. Any minute now, gentlemen... The murderer will enter this room. May I please ask you to extinguish all the candles in the room, all except one.
Monsieur Dupin, we'll all be murdered.
Which would be no great tragedy, but I wouldn't worry if I were you.
Well, as you say, Monsieur Dupin. Extinguish the candles, gentlemen.
Yes. Now we are in semi-darkness. That is fine. Listen, gentlemen. The downstairs door to my pension has opened and closed. The murderer is now downstairs. He is walking up the stairs. Now listen. Yes, listen.
For the love of heaven.
Quiet. He is coming closer. Gentlemen, are you ready to grab him when he enters?
Yes, Monsieur Dupin.
That is good. He is standing outside my door now, Monsieur le Prefect. Ready, gentlemen?
Yes.
Come in! Grab him!
Let me go! Let me go! Hang on!
So it is you, sailor.
Help the sailor to sit down.
It was a trap, huh?
Yeah, but this sailor doesn't look strong enough to commit these murders.
Let me go! Let me go!
Don't
struggle. Let me go, I say!
Please, please, please don't struggle.
You see, sailor, Monsieur le Prefect cannot arrest you for the murder because, although you are responsible for the crimes, you are not guilty. I am not guilty. I'm not. I couldn't help.
Of course you couldn't. Gentlemen, it must be obvious to you now that no man murdered these two women. The only creature able to do it would be a Bornese orangutan.
Orangutan? What?
I matched these hairs I found in the dead woman's hand, and of course they belong to just such a creature.
An orangutan.
Yes. Yes, Monsieur Dupin is right.
But tell me, how is this sailor involved?
I own the animal. Dupin put an ad in the paper saying my orangutan was captured. Well, that's why I'm here, to claim it.
But didn't you realize that Monsieur Dupin knew that the murder was an orangutan?
No. No, I didn't think anyone could solve the murders. But I did know that whoever put the ad in the paper knew that I was the owner of the animal and that he was keeping what he thought was a perfectly innocent animal.
You see, I addressed my ad personally to this sailor. This piece of cord told me a sailor owned it. There was a sailor's knot in the cord, and the knot was peculiar to those tied on Maltese vessels. Therefore, when I put the ad in the paper, I asked the sailor from the Maltese vessel, I checked on the name of the vessel from the sailing data in the paper, to come and get the beast.
Well, naturally, I came to pick him up.
Ah, now I see.
One question I must ask, sailor. How did the orangutan get hold of a razor, and how did he manage to escape?
I had the animal locked in my quarters. I captured him in Malta and brought him to this country to sell to the zoo. They're very smart, you know. For last night, when I entered my room, he was trying to shave with my razor. When I tried to chain him up, he escaped. He ran out into the streets, saw the light in number 12, Rue Morgue, climbed up the lightning rod to the ladies' apartments. Well, you know the rest.
Indeed we do. Well, gentlemen, if you have any other problems you wish settled, call on me. Just call on Monsieur Auguste Dupin. Incidentally, if you'd like to see the orangutan, you'll find it safely locked up in the zoo.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you the immortal tale, Murders in the Rue Morgue. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
Pages of the past, we have heard another immortal tale in The Weird Circle. Bellkeeper, toll the bell. Be here in this lonely cave by the restless sea once again next time for another immortal tale in The Weird Circle.
So there you go. There's the murders of the Rue Morgue, and as dramatized by The Weird Circle. Again, there's a little bit of liberty taken with this story, but not too much. They don't sound very authentically French in the story. I guess the pronunciations are correct, I guess, for the most part. it's always interesting to me that the way that, you know, Edgar Allan Poe takes different things. And as I read various works, you know, I there's definitely, you know, themes that come up. And you kind of wonder why, you know, he comes up with this ape creature as the murderer. It's definitely a twist in the tale. You're not expecting it unless you've read it before. But it's a pretty interesting culprit for a murder, you know, and just to think that he came up with that. And, you know, it, for some reason, because I've read many of his stories, it reminds me of Hop Frog, where we have Hop Frog killing the king and his counselors, where the king and his counselors are dressed up like orangutans. And, you know, I don't know if it's the you know, the time period of the 1800s or, you know, whatever. Anyway, I just kind of find these similarities fascinating. And I just, you know, wonder where he gets these different ideas. It's definitely shocking to people that think that, you know, Sherlock Holmes was the first detective type story. When it really wasn't. It was Dupin and Edgar Allan Poe coming up with the detective story. So there you have it. There's the Murders of the Rue Morgue. I'll be back for our final installment of the Edgar Allan Poe celebration this year. It is an original tale from a contemporary author, but it's not original to this podcast. It's been published before. It's been on another podcast before, in fact. But it is original, and it's from a contemporary author. And we're kind of going back to where we started. We're completing the circle of where we started this Edgar Allan Poe celebration this year. So come join me next time for the final installment this year of Edgar Allan Poe. Until then, stay safe out there and journey on.
This is Nicole Villacrez from the Drama Pod, and I'm here to tell you that the Journey Into podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives license. This means that while you cannot change it or sell it, you are encouraged to share it however and with whomever you would like. The theme music for the podcast has been provided by Man in Space.
"We shall take away your rails," he said, "and leave you here for always and always and always." They took up the old rails and built a wall in front of him so that Henry couldn't get out of the tunnel anymore. All he could do was watch the trains rushing through the other tunnel. He was very sad because he thought no one would ever see his lovely green paint with red stripes again. As time went on, Edward and Gordon would often pass by. Edward would say, "Peep, peep, hello." And Gordon would say, "Poop, poop, poop, serves you right." Poor Henry had no steam to answer. His fire had gone out. Soot and dirt from the tunnel had spoiled his lovely green paint and red stripes anyway. He wondered if he would ever be allowed to pull trains again. But I think he deserved his punishment. Don't you?